welcome to Health Affairs This Week. I'm your host, Jeff Byers. Hope everyone enjoyed the Housing and Health series from Rob Lott earlier this year in the rerun of the first season of Research on Justice for All. I was on paternity leave, and now I'm back. Moving forward, I'll be the host of Health Affairs This Week, but don't worry, the Health Affairs editorial staff you know and love will still be joining me from week to week. But today, my first guest, very excited to announce, is Brent Fulton, professor of health economics at UC Berkeley. Brent writes a special insider newsletter on antitrust and healthcare competition here at Health Affairs. Please subscribe to Insider to catch up on his newsletters. Brent, thought you could help give us a lay of the land regarding antitrust today. There's been a lot of movement in this space. Earlier this month, Senator Ed Markey proposed draft legislation to increase transparency around private equity investment in healthcare services companies. Could you give us, like, what is going on with this? Where did this come from? Why is this important?
Well, thank you, Jeff, and welcome back. I'm happy to be here. And so Senator Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren, they're the two senators from Massachusetts, are very concerned about Steward Healthcare. So Steward Healthcare is a healthcare system that operates hospitals in multiple states, including Massachusetts, where it operates 9 hospitals. And so it's backed by a private equity firm called Cerebus Capital Management. And about 3 or 4 months ago, S&P downgraded another company called Medical Properties Trust. So this is the third leg. So you have the healthcare system steward, you have Cerebus Capital Management, the private equity firm, and then this Medical Property Trust that most people have not heard of, but it's actually a publicly traded company, and it's the largest hospital landlord in the country. And so what hospitals sometimes do to raise cash is that the land that they're occupying in the building are worth a lot of money. They're in a city, and they sell the land in the building to Medical Properties Trust, and then they use that cash then to good purpose would be to upgrade facilities, equipment, and operations, and so forth. But what's been happening is sometimes that money is then used to pay a dividend to the private equity shareholders. And that's one way the private equity makes money. And in this case, they're not sure where the money is going. And so one of the key things with this bill is to have transparency for Steward Healthcare to reveal where has the money been going, because they're behind on paying $50 million to Medical Properties Trust, because when they sold the land in the building, they then have a lease agreement where they have to pay rent on that. And that's where it's opaque.
Thanks for laying that out for us. How might that be an example of how private equity acts in the healthcare field?
What the concern is, when you have a private equity investor, they have investors that have given them money, whether they're pensions, other institutions, and so forth. And their general mode of operation within hospitals or even outside of healthcare are turnaround companies. And so what they're trying to do is go in to a hospital that might be distressed, and there's many of them across the country. There's sort of two tales, that some hospital systems are doing quite well and other hospital systems aren't. And the main reason that some hospital systems aren't is demand has been going down, especially in rural areas. Then you also have a lot of Medicaid patients, and their reimbursement rates are very low as compared to Medicare or privately insured. So that puts these hospitals in distress. And so private equity is then trying to turn those around. The big concern here is what Markey and Warren are calling for is transparency, to know where the money is going, because it's become a very big concern, almost a public health crisis in the state of Massachusetts, because they operate 9 hospitals. And I can give you one case of what happened. It's a very tragic case. So Sangeeta Rashid was giving birth, and this was back in October. And after giving birth, they noticed internal bleeding, and it was in the liver. And normally what they use is an embolism coil that they weave up into the liver to stop the bleeding. But the company that provided the coils to St. Elizabeth's Medical Center had come in and repossessed the coils because they were so behind, this was Steward Healthcare, so behind on payments, not only in that hospital, but owed over $1 million in payments to the company. So she had to be transferred to another hospital and died at the other hospital. Now, whether she would have lived is uncertain, but it's a standard of care to have embolism coils available. And so what that's emblematic of is they're behind on rents, they're behind on paying vendors, but there's no transparency of where the money is going, that the Massachusetts Health and Human Service Department has asked for Steward Healthcare's financials. They won't provide it. There's a court case going on right now. And so there's a major concern that Steward is in distress financially, but then what are the remedies? That's what the senators and state leaders are trying to get at.
Thanks for sharing that story. Now, one of the questions, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but as far as the legislation, where do you see this going?
You know, I don't know whether the support is bipartisan or not, but I think there is the overall wave in healthcare, whether it's price transparency that was those regulations were issued under the Trump administration, more quality transparency, and in this case, it's financial transparency. And as private equity becomes larger and larger, not only in hospitals, but within physician organizations, nursing homes, home health, and so forth, I can see there be a push, especially when you have a situation like this with Steward Healthcare. Now, Steward Healthcare is a poster child of potentially private equity going very wrong. Now, whether that's emblematic of all private equity, you'd have to look case by case.
Well, thank you for that. Shifting gears a little bit to another area that you know pretty well is the mergers and acquisitions. So merger guidelines were recently updated last year. This was a major update, probably a long time coming. What are some of the major takeaways that you could share with us that might be relevant to the healthcare field?
Well, yes, you're correct, Jeff. The update of the merger guidelines was in a long time coming. The previous update was in 2010, so it had been 13 years. And the overall message of this update is the Federal Trade Commission, along with the Department of Justice, are going to scrutinize proposed mergers to a greater extent than they had previously under the previous guidelines. And the reason for this is that there's a concern that many markets are becoming too concentrated, whether it's horizontal concentration, two firms merging, or in healthcare, we also have vertical mergers. This is along the supply chain where hospitals purchase physician organizations, and they're concerned that that can foreclose competitive hospitals from receiving patients from those physicians that work for the competitive hospital.
We've seen a lot of vertical integration in the healthcare space. So CVS Health is a good example with the recent buyout of, I can't remember who they bought, when they bought it. It was 2018.
Oak Street, or are you talking Aetna?
Aetna, yes. So like how, you know, from a patient's perspective, might we see a lot of this vertical integration? How does this affect our care?
It can cut both ways. And that's a different situation that you have a pharmacy retailer buying a large insurance company, and then they're getting more into primary care with their Oak Street Health purchasing and so forth. And so on the one hand, you have better integration of care from a clinical perspective, that you have, if Aetna is the insurer, and you have then better linkages with the CVS pharmacy and then the primary care that they're providing. And that can be very positive. Where it can become more negative is on the price side, if that vertical integration then causes it more difficult for rivals to enter the market because they have to enter on a full vertically integrated system, and that can make it more difficult. And so that's what the antitrust is looking at. Then we'll weigh the positive aspects of mergers against the negative aspects and try to weigh, see what the net effect is.
We have seen, at least in 2022, that healthcare deals were impacted by these enforcements. So, you know, if you're looking to as a startup, or if you're a major incumbent in the space, how might that frame how you view 2024 and 2025?
With these new guidelines, along with the administration, the FTC being led by Lina Khan, they've been very forthcoming that they're going to have more antitrust enforcement, more scrutiny. You see it in big tech. You also see it in healthcare. And so they're on notice. And some argue that it can provide then a chilling effect, because one thing the merger guidelines did not do well is say when a merger won't be scrutinized, when we think that this is a merger that's generally pro-competitive and is going to not meet a lot of scrutiny. And so you can have over-enforcement, and that's not good as well, because when you do have mergers, there can be efficiencies that are gained that then lead to lower prices.
It's not really a tech podcast per se, but you have seen that the FTC has gone after these tech giants like Apple, who do wade in healthcare a little bit. But so what's the sense of these antitrust lawsuits against these tech giants, and how might that impact the healthcare field?
Tech, whether it's Google, whether it's Apple, Meta to some extent, are moving into healthcare, especially with AI. And the large data pools where their predictive analytics will help with diagnosis, treatment, and even drug discovery. And so what the FTC and DOJ are concerned with is these firms are very successful. They have amazing products, and they've gained market share through these amazing products. And that's fine. That does not violate anything with antitrust, that you have a large market share because you put out a better product, high quality, at a low price. But when they then put up and erect barriers to entry to prohibit or disincentivize entry to compete with this monopolization they created, that's what the FTC is concerned with in the DOJ. And that is a big concern, because then it can, even though these companies are very innovative, there could be outside companies that also bring new innovations that can be revolutionary. And that's what they want to ensure, that the incentives in the marketplace is set up so that these new firms can thrive and challenge these incumbents.
Well, that's probably as good a place of any to wrap up for the day. And if anyone is interested in antitrust, specifically from Brent, please join the Insider community to receive Brent's newsletter. Brent, what's on the docket for the next month in May?
Yeah, so what I've been looking at in this previous month was private equity purchasing physician organizations. So we're also going to, in the next couple of months, look at the physician space, because, as you said, you have retailers, CVS, Walgreens, and others purchasing physician organizations. You have United with Optum, another major player with physician organizations.
Well, fantastic. And also, just as a programming note for Health Affairs, we have a Head of Print article coming out next week. Be on the lookout for that in Health Affairs Today and Health Affairs Sunday Update. Please sign up for those free newsletters. We'll have a link in the show notes. And with that, thank you for listening to Health Affairs this week. Please tell a friend, hit subscribe, leave us a review. It all helps. Thanks, and have a great day. Thanks, Brent.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Good talking with you today.